right, well, welcome everyone. Great to have you here. I'm Nathan Bierma. I work at the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship as Communications and Research Coordinator.
I'm Bill DeHaan. I'm the Director of Media Relations here at Calvin.
And what we'd like to do is just kind of share some ideas with you about this, about what media relations is and the importance of it for churches. Just some really practical how-tos, at least some suggestions. I hope we'll leave you with the impression that this is not an exact science. Phil is an artist here for us at Calvin Media Relations. But we do have a couple ideas and observations and suggestions based on some of our experience in working with the media. And so we'll just go through the outline here and give you a few things to jot down, and we also welcome your questions or your comments along the way as we go. But we'll start at the top, and Phil will sort of sketch the broader area of public relations for us.
Sure. Yeah, feel free to jump in at any time. I really like this to be a conversation, and so if you've got questions, don't feel like you got to wait till the end. Public relations, I mean, I guess one of the first things, I taught a PR course here at Calvin last year. It was really kind of a good exercise for me to go back a little bit, and I've been at Calvin for 21 years. I was a sports information director for 9, and I've been the director of media relations for the last 12. And after a while, you know, you can sort of get in habits and just take things for granted, but going back and teaching a course to 18 to 21-year-olds is really refreshing for me and helped me sort of get back in touch a little bit with what public relations is all about and why we do public relations. And it's really sort of the classic textbook definition of public relations, which, you know, I told my students, okay, this is one thing, right? I said right at the start, this is going to be on the test, because if you ever want to work in PR, if you ever want to go out and get a master's in PR, this is sort of the classic textbook definition, but if you'd like to, that would be...
Throw it out there and we'll see.
Public relations is the management function that establishes and maintains mutually beneficial relationships between an organization and the publics on whom its success or failure depends. And it was good for me to go back, and I read that really fast, so I can read it again. It's a little wordy, but the critical thing to me about public relations is this idea of mutually beneficial relationships. So a relationship at the start to sort of bring about this idea of two. I mean, any relationship needs to have one person on one side, one person on the other side, or an organization and people. So when we talk about public relations, I told my students the relations part of that is really important. You're trying to establish relationships. And in public relations, we think about the fact that these relationships need to be mutually beneficial. So PR people can get a little snooty about this and say it's not like marketing where you're just trying to, you know, sell something to somebody. You don't care about whether they benefit from it or not. You're just trying to sell them something. Public relations, I think, has a little different philosophical bent, and it's this idea of mutually beneficial. So when we think about Calvin College and we think about public relations, we have a lot of publics. That's one of the things that the students have initially had a little bit of a hard time grasping, but you know, at Calvin, our students are one of our publics. Parents of students are one of our publics. Donors are a public. Alumni are a public. There's a lot of publics out there. And when we think about, when you think about public relations from a church perspective, I think that can be an interesting exercise. Could be an interesting exercise to go through with your church. Is just to start by listing who are our publics. Who are the people on whom our success or failure depends? And beyond that, who are some publics maybe that we would want to have be our publics that aren't a public right now? So, you know, your current church members would certainly be a public, but then, of course, there's people that aren't members of your church that don't have a church home. That's another public. And beyond that, you know, you can think about members of your denomination. If you belong to a denomination, denominational leadership could be a public. In your city, you could think about government officials could be one of your identified publics. You know, so that could be an interesting thing to go through for a church, just to say who are the publics that we think our success or failure depends upon and with whom we would like to have mutually beneficial relationships. And then you can reach your publics in lots of different ways, you know, direct mail, newsletters, electronic communication, website, advertising, media relations. And so that's at Calvin College. What I'm charged with is this task of media relations. which, as Nathan said, is kind of an inexact science. It's really, when I talk to people at Cowan about media relations, I use kind of this golf analogy, which I don't know how many people here are golfers, but it's sometimes on a golf ball you have what's called a risk-reward shot, where maybe on a par 5 you can get to the green in 2, but you got to go over a big pond. So the risk is you might dump your ball into the pond. The reward is you might hit a good shot and get on the green in 2 and have a chance for an eagle putt. Well, media relations is a little bit of a risk-reward proposition because you don't control the message. You can influence the message by sending out a press release and by having a good conversation with a reporter, but ultimately somebody else, a reporter, is writing the story. And so that's where that kind of risk element comes into play. Versus, for example, if you write a direct mail piece, you control the direct mail piece. It will say exactly what you want it to say. A press release, you control the press release. It will say exactly what you want it to say. But unless the newspaper runs the press release verbatim, there's an element of kind of surrendering control there. And I'm comfortable with that, but sometimes people at Calvin aren't quite as comfortable with that, and sometimes people in your church might not be comfortable with that either. So that's something to think about as you think about this idea of media relations. So
to focus on media relations in the context of a church or religious organization, let me say two things about what I personally think media relations is not in a church setting. I don't see it as advertising, purely. I don't see it as just, well, let's get exposure. It's partially that, but not primarily. And I don't see it as preaching. I don't see the goal of media relations to convert people through the media. The media can be a great tool to develop relationships and open up a conversation that might not otherwise take place. But I don't see its primary goal as conversion of someone. There are three very important things, and some of these might seem a little open-ended and a little intangible, and I think that's okay. The purpose of media relations in a church setting or any setting. First of all, simply to have your stories told, telling your stories. A church, what is a church if not a place of incredible stories? Stories of people who have been there 30 years, of tragedy and bouncing back from tragedy, of people being... you know what takes place in your churches. And to have those stories be part of a public conversation, the public's story, is an interesting prospect. And it can be helpful for your church, especially if you don't have a newsletter or a magazine or something like that. Many of you probably do. But if you don't, it can be very helpful to get that story told and to get it told in the public record. That can be an interesting prospect. Second, you're a member of a civic community. Eric Jacobson is here. He's done some great thinking and writing on the idea that a church is not just a location, a destination for commuters to come in and do their thing and get out. A church is, to a greater or lesser extent, embedded in its civic context, in its neighborhood, in its city, in its state, in its country. And so working with the media, which is, in one sense, the record of civic life, is a way to participate in that civic story, that civic dialogue. And now I don't want to take that too far. I mean, I do think there's separation of church and state. The church doesn't serve the state, and the church must be prophetic and speak to the state. But simply validating the fact that the church is not an isolated location, but is a member of the civic fabric, by working with the media and maybe getting a story about your church told in the media, validates that. And finally, this comes the closest to preaching, but I want to try to back off it, communicating the mission and work of your church to a mass audience. Even if no one is going to come to your church in response to an article and try to get converted, the fact that your mission and your service can be represented in the newspaper can still be an important thing. So people might say, well, I would never set foot in that church, but I know what they're about now. They do that kind of thing, or they have that kind of person. I think there's value to that. Where people begin to, even if all they do is ride past your church, they ride past it a little more knowledgeably. Now, that's pretty modest. That's a pretty modest goal. That's not very ambitious, but I think that's okay. I think there's some value to that. So, be open-ended, but for me, the most important thing is validating that you are a member. Your organization, your church, is a member of civic life, and the media, in many ways, represent the public dialogue of that civic life.
Yeah, I'd add a couple of things. One that you kind of touched on a little bit, but when we talk about, you know, this idea of public relations and who are your publics, one of the reasons you do media relations is because through the media you can reach publics you don't necessarily know about. If you've got a whole raft of addresses, on file email addresses and mailing addresses and everything else, those are all the people you know about. You can send them things that are happening in your church, but you know, the media is kind of that shotgun vehicle that's going to reach a whole lot of people that you don't know about and maybe that don't know about you. So that's a big reason we do media relations at Calvin, is to get our message out to people that maybe don't know about us and that we don't know about them, and perhaps start a relationship with them somehow through a story that gets told. And then the second reason, another reason that we do media relations at Calvin, is that this idea of a third-party endorsement. So that if we send out a brochure on something that's happening at Calvin, we've written it, or if we do an advertisement in the Grand Rapids Press, we've written it, and people are savvy enough to know that we've written it, and so there's a little cynicism there, there's a little skepticism, and I think especially for younger generations that have been bombarded by so many advertisements and so many messages, their cynicism level gets pretty high, but a story that's written by a reporter is written by a third party about your organization. So that traditionally has been the reason that you do media relations, because that story is seen as having more validity. People know that you didn't write that. A reporter for an outside organization wrote that. And so it can be more compelling. A story about something happening at Calvin can be much more compelling, even for our publics that know us. That can be more compelling than an advertisement or a brochure or something like that. So that's been a very traditional reason to do media relations, is that idea of a third-party endorsement.
Can I just insert one more thing before moving on to the next one? In the context of this symposium, media relations, this is a really long shot, but media relations can be a way to start a conversation about the meaning of worship. The story in the media and the story outside the church tends to look at worship either as sort of rote ceremony that's just sort of archaic and traditional, or as in the more contemporary end, sort of a manufactured experience that's just like a concert or something. And so here we are, 1,500 people having this great conversation about what worship is all about. To try to extend that, Samuel, the articles I gave you, I think, extend that conversation where people think, oh yeah, there is a purpose to that. We are supposed to be engaged in what this is about. That's the hardest to pull off, because I think getting the media to take that seriously, get interested in that, and try to have that conversation is hard. But I think these articles show that that is possible.
Well, and we could add the whole subject of prayer. When the fire destroyed the Alger Hardware Store in August, and 10 days later we hosted a community prayer service for the owners. It wasn't clear that they were going to rebuild. The owners of the hardware store and the two adjacent businesses that were affected. Then the press just really picked up on the fact that there was to be a communal prayer service, that prayers are being offered corporately by neighbors for these businesses and particularly for the owners of the businesses. And it's just remarkable how fascinated the press was that the community was coming together following the fire to pray about what we do now.
Right.
And wow.
Well, I think that sometimes the media gets a little bit of a bad rap, I think, for not being sensitive to issues of religion or not taking them seriously. But the coverage that I saw of that prayer service all seemed like it was done very well.
It was marvelous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing that sometimes doesn't happen there is the media will cover a candle vigil or something like that and cover it in very vague, sentimental terms.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the question is then to push that conversation forward. In the press, we're lucky to have a very knowledgeable religion editor. So he'll dig beneath that veneer. But, I kind of joke that the majority of media coverage of religion tends to be either scandal-driven mm-hmm. or sentimental mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't really enrich anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anything we can do to push the conversation beyond those two things, I think, is valuable.
When I pitch a story to the media, I do so with this idea, is this a good story for the media? Because, you know, we want to get coverage, but it's not about us, because it has to resonate with the person that I'm working with in the media. That's what they get out of it. They get a good story out of it. So all the media that came out and covered, you guys got a good story out of it. They felt good about it. But you know, that's where I think sometimes churches can be more proactive about identifying the good stories in their congregation and realizing that they're actually doing the media a favor by alerting them to these stories. So not just, you know, depending on the grapevine or, you know, maybe a person in your church who happens to work for the local NBC affiliate and finds out about it, and then the local ABC affiliate, CBS affiliate are saying, how come we didn't hear about that?
Yeah.
You know, we try to be very egalitarian here at Calvin, too, and not, you know, just hit one outlet or, you know, play favorites. And that you got to be careful about that, too, in media relations. But the other thing I was going to say is, no, that story was authentic, too.
Mm-hmm.
You guys didn't do that prayer service because you wanted to get on TV. And media will see right through that. You know, these kind of staged events, that's completely ineffective. Well, this was an authentic story that was part of your community. And that media, you know, for all the criticism they get, I find working in Grand Rapids at least that our media really resonate with those kind of authentic stories.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, as you identify things happening in your congregation, you have to start to look at it a little bit through a reporter's eyes, too, and say, well, you know, why? Go ahead.
Could you flesh that out a little bit more? Like, what makes a good story from the media's perspective?
Yeah, well, that's you know, I've been doing this for 21 years, and I think I'm still learning every day about what makes a good story. You know, sometimes I'll send out a news release that I think is going to capture media's attention, and it just sort of fizzles. And, you know, other times I'll send something out. Sometimes it depends on if it's a slow news day or not a slow news day. You know, so there's some sort of, you know, element of luck, I guess, involved in that. But, you know, I think this idea of authenticity is very important because so many media outlets are getting literally hundreds of press releases a day from PR firms that are pitching just, you know, really crappy, superficial stuff. So the story that cuts through the clutter that, you know, has a little different kind of element. At Calvin, well, I'm trying to think of some of the stories that we've pitched in recent days. We had a couple of students that went to Uganda last year on an interim trip and had this really amazing experience in Uganda and got to know these folks that are doing relief work in Uganda. They're native Ugandans. And they came back to campus and they wanted to share this experience with their fellow students. So they talked to a Calvin prof, and they organized an interim class this year where they brought two of these Ugandans to Grand Rapids to teach this class to Calvin students. So that was a story that got good play in the Grand Rapids Press and some other local media. But again, it had that idea of, you know, students, young people are really interesting to the media right now, I think, because they're all trying to figure out how to capture young people as consumers. So that sounds a little cynical, but the reality is, you know, young people aren't reading the newspaper as much, they're not watching as much TV, so all of our media outlets are really interested in young people and writing stories about young people because they see that as a way to appeal to a demographic they're not appealing to. So with your churches, you know, interesting things that youth groups are doing could be interesting, but I would say one of the ways that I've learned to identify what stories are interesting to the media is simply to ask the media. So identify in your community who the reporters are that you would like to develop a relationship with and begin to develop those relationships. Go out to coffee with your local religion editor and say, you know, what kind of stories are you interested in? What kind of things you're interested in? The other thing is I read a ton of publications, you know, religious publications, secular publications. I look at a ton of websites. And that's research for me. That's me being able to identify what kind of reporters do what kind of stories.
And this is where we go back to the line, mutually beneficial relationships. If you're not asking what's beneficial to the media outlet, if you're not asking that as at least one of the questions, then you're probably not thinking it through. You know, Phil has joked before that people will see him reading the Grand Rapids Press or something, and they'll say, oh, Phil, you're on your lunch break, kicking back, reading the paper. No, he's doing his job. He's doing his homework. And the more that when you take that religion editor out for coffee, you say, hey, that story you did 2 weeks ago about such and such, you know, I had this kind of reaction to it.
Yeah.
Or I've noticed you've been covering this kind of thing lately.
Yeah.
I tell you, as I'm a freelance journalist myself, and any kind of response like that shows familiarity with your work and what you might kind of be interested in, is just a huge part of building a relationship. Question there.
On the flip side of that, have y'all had a situation where you dealt with a scandal here where you having to manage that with the media so it
Yeah, absolutely.
Beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I answer that, I'll just say one more thing about what Nathan said. You know, most reporters now have their email address at the end of their stories, and reporters like anybody else, they like to get positive feedback. And unfortunately, what they normally get is negative feedback. So if you're taking the time to read their articles and maybe just send a quick email to somebody and say, hey, I really liked this article that you did, and here's a couple reasons why. That can go a long ways in terms of that relationship building thing. Now, to your question,
can I answer one more thing just relatedly? One thing that Phil does that I've learned from is he'll email a reporter a story that isn't related to Kelvin, saying, hey, I just thought you'd find this interesting. There's this New York Times article this morning about youth ministry and blah, 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 and I thought you'd be interested in it. Emails it to them. Well, that's first of all, to do something that's not self-interested.
Yeah.
And to show something that shows, well, I thought you'd be interested in this, might match your interests, and just keeping you in the loop in case you missed that, that's another tremendous aspect of relationship building. So Phil's value to Kelvin, it goes beyond the press releases he writes, although he does those too. It's the fact that he has these relationships, by now years-long relationships, with the local reporters where he can email them and call them and has a relationship to fall back on.
Back to your question, the scandal thing, the relationship building is sometimes the most important thing you can have done when it comes to a scandal. Because if you don't have that relationship, if there isn't that level of trust there, when the scandal comes around, you are sunk. You know, if your church has no relationship with a religion reporter in town, and the first time that your minister talks to the religion reporter is when your bookkeeper just embezzled $100,000, where do you go from there? Right, this reporter has no clue who your pastor is, has never talked to him before, and now all of a sudden your pastor or somebody from your church, you know, the chair, your deacons, whoever, is in a position of having to try to explain this embezzlement. It's really easy at that point for the reporter to be a little tougher on you maybe than they would have if there'd been a relationship there, or for that reporter to not know whether he or she should trust you.
At the very least, the relationship is established confrontationally in that situation.
Right. So that's a big thing in terms of scandal. We've had scandals at Calvin, and the first rule is don't lie. That seems so obvious, but a lot of times people try and do lie. And the media have so many resources. They can find so much stuff out of Freedom of Information Act and all kinds of databases and city records and everything else that they can get to. So, that's the first rule in a scandal. Don't lie. We try and be as proactive as we can at Calvin. If there's a bad story, we try and get out in front and sometimes even send a news release out about it that explains our whole side of the story, get it out there. So those are situations, too, where you can really earn your stripes as a media relations person. If that reporter that you've been working with on all the good stories, and your best buddies and, good friends and all that, on the good stories, it's easy to get along, right? But if now on the bad story, you're still willing to work with them, you're still easy to get along with, that's where you develop some real credibility in terms of your relations. When the going gets tough, if you're not bailing out, if you're sticking in there, that's really important. So,
and the chances are the dirt will get out through one outlet or another, in one way or another. And if you're the one who puts it out there, then that's an act of trust. And it's pretty smart organizationally. Questions?
Yeah, is there, I guess, listening to this, and just being a reader myself, it makes sense to me how you might approach that with a local paper. But is there a different way you approach relation to news media or other forms of media?
In terms of TV?
Yeah, do they have a religion editor for the TV
station? Well, that not rarely, no. Most TV stations have general assignment reporters. They may have some.
Metro.
That's sometimes they'll have maybe an education reporter, but with TV and with radio, a lot of times you're just going to get whoever is on that day.
Are there strategies for establishing relations with TV media?
Well, getting to know the assignment director at a TV station is usually a pretty good bet because they tend to stay around a little longer. A lot of the general assignment reporters will last like 2 years and then they're on to the next bigger market. They're always moving up. Radio stations, the news director is usually a good source. But there again, I mean, just watching the news, listening to the radio, you know, I try and not have the same station on in my car. I try to sort of listen to a different station every day, and, you know, just, and even see which stations are doing news. You know, a lot of radio stations aren't even doing news anymore. So, you know, listen to different stations and see if they're doing news, and you'll get a feel for the station a little bit. Really, in terms of, you know, if you want to start sending news releases out, the best thing is just to call up the station and say, you know, we'd like to send occasional news releases. You know, I always tell that to people. If I get a new media contact and I ask them if I can send them my news release distribution list, I always tell them I'm not going to flood you. You know, I'm going to be very judicious about what I send you. I'm going to send you things that I think you'll be interested in. And they always say, yeah, add me to the list. So the same, you know, for radio station. If you find a radio station in your community that you think would be a good fit for news releases from your church, call them up and say, you know, who's the news director? Do you prefer to, you know, get your news releases emailed or faxed? These days it's almost always email. If they say email, okay, who should I send them to?
And often some of that contact info will be on their websites too.
Yeah, you can look at websites.
On the back of your handout, I have some comments from a couple of recent conversations I had with people who represent churches who receive worship renewal grants from the Calvin Institute of Christian Worship. And if you're not familiar with that program, you can find more about it on our website. And I'm not saying you should only pursue media relations if you have a grant project, but these are unique cases, or these are interesting cases, I think. And you'll see that in both cases, they say, well, I you know, it wasn't complicated. I called up the religion editor in the case of Sam Quisenberry. Interesting, Pastor Nelson in Zealand here says he got into the habit of just sending out a press release himself whenever he thought there was something of the community interest. You know, I don't think press release writing is something they cover in seminary, but he just took it upon himself to do that. And he said the majority of the time, he would get at least some kind of response. And if you'll notice, kind of what we were saying earlier, the second point under Samantha Quisenberry's comment, one of the things Jared said during our meeting, he met with a few people from the church, was that he was glad to meet with us face-to-face. It gave him an opportunity to establish some relationships so that when he was doing a piece on something else, he had some contacts for people to call, and he's done that since then. He's called them up and quoted them. And she says later, it's good to establish those relationships because they're going to trust you and you're going to trust them more. And as Phil said, that last sentence there is key. If they know, you're not going to flood them. You're going to be selective, and you're going to try to be sensitive to what their interests are. Then I think the likelihood is good that they'll be receptive.
Yeah, how do you do media relations? We've been kind of jumping back and forth around that a little bit, but it could be something as simple as an email. You know, I mean, a press release, sure, we send out all kinds of press releases, but with that Masonry Day story, I just sent him an email and said, kind of, here's, it was probably three paragraphs, here's what's going on, and then it included a link to the engineering department website where they described more about Masonry Day. You know, it can be really informal, and sometimes that's actually very effective. You know, an email or a phone call, it doesn't have to be an elaborate sort of process to do media relations.
I'm actually a big believer in the four-sentence email when it comes to pitching stories. I'm a freelance writer, so I have to pitch stories to my editor. And these days, they tend to be one-sentence pitches. But just a basic email saying what your story is, why you think the reporter will be interested. You did a story on such and such last month. This is like that, but here's the new twist or something. How you're willing to make more information available. Give me a call. Here's the link for our website. Press release is attached if you're interested. I mean, it really can be as simple as that, and reporters tend to get so many emails that they don't want much more than that at first. They'll want a lot more later, but they don't want everything right up front.
This church marketing website had some stuff on there about actually writing an effective press release, and it's pretty good, I think. Just the facts, don't rack your brain trying to craft some clever lead, just get to the facts, that's all the reporter wants anyway. Put the most important information first. Editors are busy. If your press release doesn't grab their attention, the first paragraph, it'll never see the light of day. Use short sentences and paragraphs. You're not trying to emulate a Pauline epistle here, it says. you know, use an active voice. Avoid jargon and cliches. Don't use Christianese in your release. Don't say VBS, say Vacation Bible School. So those are pretty good tips, I think. You know, I always think about press releases when I'm writing press releases at Calvin. I always think about sort of, you know, what would I tell my wife at supper time? You know, how would I describe this? I mean, you know, what would I think was interesting enough about it to tell my wife, you know, over the supper table? You know, really, that's you're trying to sort of think about, you know, what's interesting about this, what's important, and you know, do it. You can do that in a very folksy, informal fashion. That's very appropriate, I think.
So for all the strategies we've talked about, if you want to try to boil them down to the three items I have listed under three, is on the one hand, there's writing a news release or a brief email pitch. A more earnest approach would be the direct contact with a reporter, calling them up or meeting them, pulling them aside at an event they're covering and say, hey, do you have a second? And then the third basic strategy is relationship building without a defined outcome. You know, the coffee, even if you don't have a story to pitch, the email, hey, I just thought you'd be interested in this. So those three things that kind of increase in earnestness, you might say. I mean, like we said, it's complicated and there are different ways to go about it, but it really does boil down to those three basic approaches.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We are so, I mean, Charlie Honey, I'm trying to think how long he's been religion editor at the Grand Rapids Press, but it's just a balanced, even-handed, long-term guy. I mean, I would assume in some papers that turns over every 5 years.
Not only that, but it's pretty rare to have a religion editor at all. In fact, most people are dealing with Metro reporters who were covering a crime yesterday, and now they're covering a worship service.
Yeah.
And not only that, they covered four crimes last week, so they know how that goes, but they don't know a worship service from anything. We are very blessed here in this community to have Charlie, who's knowledgeable, who's sincerely curious, and who's fair and who's careful. So we're lucky, and a lot of people have had good experiences with him. In other cases, it can be the case that somebody had a really bad experience with a reporter, and they say, well, forget that. Looking at number four for a second, the website is increasingly becoming a tool for reaching out. And remember what Phil said about multiple publics. A website can serve multiple publics. In fact, one of the sections we have on our Worship Institute website, under Serving You, it says, here's what we think you'd like to click on if you're a student. Here, if you're a pastor, here are things for musicians. Here are things for scholars. And you don't want to nicheify everything that much, but we do realize that we serve different publics. And in the same way, one way to break down your website is for visitors. Here's when the service is. Here's what we're about. For your congregation, here are the announcements of the week. For the media, here's our news releases. Another way to serve the media with a website is a history of the church, maybe a bio about the pastors or staff on the website. It helps to have the date that was posted so the reporter knows if it's current or not. Another thing that's becoming very huge just in the last year is podcasts of sermons. Are we realizing that the iTunes store is a venue for ministry? It's a place to be present. So that when people search sermon podcasts, and some do, they might find it there, or they can find it directly over your site. And if you don't know what a podcast is, it's sort of a direct automatic download, sort of like a radio program for your iPod. And it sounds pretty complicated, but you know, everybody in this room has someone in their congregation who knows twice as much about technology as any of us. And actually, I've looked into podcasting a little bit, and it's not terribly complicated. It's basically saving a digital file of a sermon, and then inserting that file into a line of code. And there are guides to walk you through that just by Googling, how do I do a podcast? So assign your tech guru to check that out. And it's a simple, but I think effective and meaningful way to sort of extend the reach of what you have to say.
It can be a good thing for members of your congregation.
Yeah.
You know, somebody recovering from a broken leg and they can't get to church for a couple weeks, you know, they could pull it up on your computer as a podcast.
Might hurt your attendance, though.
Not if you take Visa or MasterCard.
Yeah.
To combine that with number five, then, you know, a lot of this might sound pretty elaborate. Well, do we have to hire a Phil DeHaan to pull this off? I think that the number one rule under number five is keep it simple. You don't necessarily have to hire a media relations person. Maybe it's like this pastor in Zealand. He just, you know, in 10 minutes after his morning coffee, fires out a press release. or picks up the phone. But what about the people in your congregations who work in marketing and public relations and do not want to serve on the building committee, do not want to teach Sunday school, but maybe they'd be open to serving on a public relations committee, or at least being sort of an informal representative to try to do this, taking the reporter out to coffee? It's a way that they can serve the congregation using their skills that then takes the pressure off you, since you have five other responsibilities, or more than that.
Well, the website can be a great way to get younger people involved, too.
Yeah. Like I said, there are people in those pews who know much more about technology than any of us. If that's a way that they can serve the church by taking some of the load of a website, especially if you use sort of a blog format for your site rather than setting it up as having different sections, and you can have a really elaborate structured site, or you can just have sort of a blog interface. And again, ask your bloggers in your congregation how this goes, so that to update your site, you just have to log in and write something new rather than open up your Dreamweaver, FTP it up to a server, all this stuff. So you can make a simpler interface so that it's not a big undertaking to maintain and keep a website going. So keep it simple, keep it small, but strategically look for people who might be able to serve in this area.
Back to the relationship thing. Have you read, do you feel like a reporter didn't handle a story very well, or wasn't very charitable or fair? Give me advice on... Ignore it.
It happens. I mean, that's one of that's sort of the risk reward aspect of media relations, right? Is sometimes a reporter doesn't really get the story right, and it doesn't turn out the way people in your organization had hoped it would turn out, including yourself. So there's I think some of the things that you can do in that situation are if there's a mistake, you can get a correction. I mean, that's the sort of the first most obvious thing. Most newspapers have a corrections column or section. Grandpa's Press is on A2, runs down the left-hand side. So that's the first thing, get a correction. And most papers will have contact information. Here's who to call if you need a correction. If there's something it's not really an error, but it's sort of just, the whole thing kind of got messed up and it didn't really come across the way you're hoping it would come across, a letter to the editor might be appropriate. The letters to the editor page in the Grand Rapids Press is probably the most read page in the paper. A letter to the editor from your minister or whoever can be a good corrective. And sometimes the Grand Rapids Press and other papers will run what they call dissent pieces or guest essays, things of that nature.
Does any of that ever affect the relation? I mean, sometimes... In a work relationship, you're going over their head, in a sense, and that hurts the relationship.
Well, right. One of the first steps would be to talk to the reporter and say, this kind of got messed up a little bit. I'm just kind of wondering if we did something, if we were unclear in what we communicated or, what happened there. But, there's also that idea, I think, that a letter to the editor that would clarify something I don't think would offend the reporter. A dissent piece could be a little more delicate for the reporter, if they feel like you're kind of going over their head. But, sometimes it's worthwhile to do that.
If the first sentence of your email is, however patronizing it might sound, thanks for your interest in this. We appreciate having the story in the paper, even if you maybe didn't appreciate having the story in the paper that day.
The other thing is, that might have gotten edited out of her story.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times reporters will write a 20-inch story and they got room for 15 inches. So where does the other 5 inches go? Well, it goes wherever the editor decides it's going to go, and then the reporters read it and they go, oh, crap, why'd they take that out? I mean, I've had that tons of times where reporters say, oh, man, I apologize, but, my editor took out a couple of things that really screwed the story up.
So that's a good point. I mean, as a freelancer, I have a really good relationship with my editor, but sometimes things will show up, and maybe sometimes it's my editor and sometimes it's the editor after her who saw it later who tweaks something, and I don't get final approval before it's in print. And so I think, oh, that's not what I wrote, and usually it's fine. But that is important to keep in mind, that it might not be the reporter's fault.
And that's customary. The person writing the story, the reporter, he or she doesn't see the final...
Not usually.
Usually there isn't time.
Once you let go of it, it's a process.
So that's
two in the morning.
Yeah.
that's another component of the whole risk-reward thing, right? Yeah. Is, you know, at first you give it to the reporter, and you don't get to see the story. You know, that's the classic, like, you know, a Calvin professor get interviewed, and then ask the reporter, well, can I see your story before you? And I was like, but don't ever ask a reporter if you can see their story before it goes into print.
But I do think...
You could fact-check, yeah. You know, like, if you have any questions, you know, if you're dealing with something, some, you know, theological thing, and there's all kinds of... facts about it. You could say to the reporter, you know, hey, if you need any help, you know, on these facts, I'm more than happy. But the reporter's not going to let you see the actual story. So that's the first thing. You're handing the reporter.
You're letting it go.
Yeah, you're letting it go. And then the reporter's letting it go to the editor. And then the third thing, and this is what I always take heat for at Calvin, is the headline.
Yeah.
I have taken so much heat for headlines where the story was fine.
And the reporter does not control
it. That's the headline. Yeah. So, you know, there's headline writers that read the story, and I think, in my opinion, they probably read the first three lines, and then they get their headline out of that. So you know, I always end up with these headlines that just make you cringe. But
I'm generally looking for a bad pun.
Usually.
I do think it's fair, by the way, as long as you show that you're not looking for editorial control or pre-approval, I think, personally, it's reasonable to ask if you can review your quotes, if there's time. If the reporter has a deadline in an hour, probably not time. But say, can you read back to me what you have down for my quote, or can you email me what you have down as quoted? I think that's reasonable. Not everybody will agree to it, but I think that's fair. And again, if the reporter is
curious, reporters agree to that.
I've done that as a reporter.
Yeah, really?
Oh yeah. And you know, again, because if you care about accuracy, then that can only benefit you. So what I'll do with the source sometimes, if there's time, and I write mostly feature stories, so I have the luxury of time that a lot of reporters don't have. Is sometimes I'll send them my article with everything clipped out except just the facts, any details, and their quotes. So they get a version with a lot of dot, 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 and then quotes and details. And I say, if you have time to go over this, can you let me know? I'm doing that in my own interest. I don't want to get it wrong. Yeah. But then they also have a chance to say, no, you said 45, it's actually 47. Now, that's pretty rare, especially in the fast-paced world of media that's only getting more fast-paced with 24-hour news. But if there's time, I think it's reasonable. But some reporters will resist that, saying, hey, you're trying to tamper with my story.
And the danger is, you know, if people usually want to be more flowery than they were when they were actually talking over the phone, you know, because they talk different than you write. And so, you know, that's, even at Calvin sometimes, I'll run a press release draft by somebody, and then sometimes folks will want to make that quote, you know, so much more flowery.
Say effervescent.
Well, and I just, you know, that I always like quotes to sound the way people talk. You know, so that's where, but we're getting into a whole different
dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
The tricky thing about media relations is you want to give them as many details as they need and be comprehensive. But frankly, you want to keep your sound bite short. Mm-hmm. Because the shorter your quote-unquote sound bites are, or your core idea is, the less likely it is to get edited. If you answer, as a reporter, I constantly have sources answer me in three paragraphs. Well, now the decision is mine about what to include. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying don't tell me everything I need to know, but I'm saying if you can sum it up in one paragraph, then you've just made the decision of what gets you.
Well, that's, and we're kind of venturing into some territory here that we didn't talk about, I think, last year when we did this. But, I mean, if you do a press release and you get a reporter interested in your story, then the next step is, okay, well, how do you handle that interview? That's a whole other ballgame in terms of...
And if you look on the back of your sheet, there are some recommended resources. The last thing there is a link that contains the outline of what's on the other side. I'll put these quotes up there and this list of resources. And one of those links, I think it is Introduction to Media Relations, includes specific tips for talking to a reporter, specific tips for writing a brief pitch email. So look at that link and you can find a lot more resources. The Elbin Institute puts out a lot of excellent stuff. My favorite title there is Find a Niche and Scratch It, Marketing Your Congregation.
The thing I always tell Calvin professors is you don't have to do the interview on the spot.
You can call that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would ask about their deadline.
Well, yeah, that's different because the radio folks are on tighter deadlines. You know, Wood Radio's running news at the top every hour. So, you know, that's a little different. TV has you know, the 6 o'clock or whatever. Yeah. Christianity Today, their deadlines are, you know, weeks out, so they've got tons of time. The Daily Newspaper, those guys will try and make you think they don't have much time, but they always have more time than they're letting on. So I always tell Calvin professors, if you get that sort of unexpected phone call from a reporter, you're not ready to talk, I mean, we want to be as accommodating as we can, but then ask the person, what's your deadline?
Sure.
Let me call you back at such a
point. What do you want me to know? Respect me to know.
Yeah, what's your story about?
Yeah.
And then you kind of give yourself a little time to prepare, and maybe even to look at a couple of resources online or to do a little Google search on the topic and sort of see what's out there. But I always tell professors, you do not have to talk to a reporter like that. I mean, because that's oftentimes when you can get yourself into trouble. And it's just not courteous. I mean, they have a job to do, and we want to respect that job as much as we can and work with them as best we can. But it's a give and take.
I have some sources in my own freelance reporting who prefer to reply to me by email because they can think it through and they can get the wording right.
Yeah.
And I love it because...
There it is.
First of all, I just copy and paste. That's
there
great.
It is, yeah.
But I know I'm not going to get them wrong.
Okay.
Now, again, time doesn't always allow for that, and some people will prefer the in-person contact. And, frankly, there's tends to be an older generation in newspapers that are a little more email-averse. But if you can ask if that's an option, that can be a wonderful way to retain some control over what you're saying.
Yeah, I would say with that press reporter, I mean, just to say, hey, I'd love to talk to you about this, but I just pulled my lunch out of the microwave, so, give me an hour.
Tell me what it's about.
What you're writing about, and I'll call you back at 1 o'clock.
And be prepared that person might then call Pastor Joe across the street and who will let you talk to him, but that's the... A couple more comments, just briefly, about different kinds of media. We talked mostly about the news media in terms of newspapers, radio, and TV stations. A couple forms of media not to neglect. One is your denominational publication, if you're a member of a denomination, or some organization affiliate. Most of these things have magazines or websites or whatnot. That can be a great way to communicate to other people who are in the same boat with the same mission as you. And isn't it amazing how well those things are read? I always joke because when I started freelancing, I would do little things, blurbs for the Banner, our denominational news magazine at the Christian Reformed Church. And then I was lucky enough to get some stories in the Detroit Free Press and things like that. Well, it's funny because the Detroit Free Press has how many thousands of readers, but everybody at church stops me, hey, love what you did in the Banner. I don't hear boo about what was in the Detroit Free Press. Some of these periodicals have a very intense and loyal and interested and invested readership, and that, in some ways, that might even be a more important public to reach in some cases. And then the other is the area of blogs and websites, and you can include MySpace and things like that on it. Your youth probably are already members of this media. They are part of the producers of this media. I think it'd be a neat idea to try asking the youth group or some of your bloggers to keep a blog for the church. And it wouldn't be, personal reflections on their lives and their girlfriends and whatnot. Hey, this is what we talked about in youth group this week. Or, hey, I attended this church in car wash on Saturday and here's what happened. To sort of, in a way, it's employing them to be reporters in this new media format, the blog. By the way, that might also be a way of drawing a reporter's interest if a reporter follows that blog. But that's not the primary point. The point is you're involving the youth and you're developing a chronicle of your congregation. We worked with one grant recipient who had their website, all the bells and whistles. They had a guy scan some of the artwork that the kids did in Sunday school and posted at the website. So if you wanted to see the artwork that they did in Sunday school, you go to the website and you get a JPEG. Now that's pretty fancy, but what a great way to see things that otherwise would only be beamed at by parents and hung on the fridge, which is great. But that's developing some connections intergenerationally and congregation wide using these new tools. So these new tools, a lot of people might have a lot of fear, a lot of suspicion about them. Oh, aren't blogs about a lot of ranting and four letter words? They can be used as tools of communication within and beyond your congregation.
And they are being used by people. I mean, Calvin students, there's this thing called Facebook that colleges and universities and high schools use, and Calvin students are checking their Facebook pages 6, 8, 10, 12 times a day. When I taught this PR class last year, I said to kids, what are some of the best ways to communicate with you? And we have this email called Student News that goes out to every student email box. And I said to these 28 students, so how many of you read Student News? And two hands went up. This is an email newsletter. 26 out of 28 students aren't reading it. And I said, well, that's kind of a problem, because one of the ways that the college assumes that to communicate with you is through Student News. Oh, no, we never read it. I said, well, how many people have Facebook pages? 28 out of 28 hands went up. How many of you check it every day? 28 out of 28 hands went up. So I got a Facebook page so that I can start to communicate with my class through Facebook. So there's a whole realm of new technology out there that young people are using that I think, you know, it behooves us to understand it and to figure out how to connect to it.
Someone once said to me, I'm pretty sure this was overstating it, but someone said to me, oh yeah, with kids of a certain age, 14 to 18, email is so old-fashioned. Now it's all about posting a message on someone's Facebook page. We're getting there, but I said to a pastor yesterday, she said, oh, I'm worried about my youth pastor posting all these things on his MySpace. He's just, you know, he can say whatever he wants and he's representing the church. I said, you know, you have some concern about that, and you have some reason to be concerned. But be glad you have a youth pastor who's savvy about this, because if your youth pastor doesn't have a Facebook or a MySpace, they're missing out in one of the central ways that the people they minister to communicate on a daily basis.